The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Lynette's Shrimp House, located in Highland Park. It's Metro Detroit's premier destination, serving juicy fried shrimp, fish, and wings, alongside soul food sides and new additions to the menu, like turkey tacos and desserts. Located at 13548 Woodward in Highland Park, just north of the Davison, Lynette's is open for takeaway noon to 8 Tuesday and Thursday, noon to 10 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Call now, get some Lynette's. Hey, greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Thank you very much for being with me on this Thursday. It's Thursday already. Well, you know, I did not go to the Mackinac Policy Conference this year, and that's okay. I've been keeping tabs on things that are happening through online streams that are there. Of course, my conversations with Nancy Kaffer the last couple of days. But it is always nice to get a non-journalist perspective on things that are going on, and I think I've got somebody who's pretty interesting to talk to today. My guest is Mark Burton. He is the CEO of the Michigan the former CEO of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. He is joining Honigman as the partner and co-leader of the firm's Economic Development Incentives Group. And of course, that happened back in March. Now, he of course took over the MEDC right before COVID hit. That, of course, put a crimp in all of our development plans here in the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. But I thought it's still an important idea to talk to him about what trends we are seeing when it comes to economic incentives and developments. And what is the best way to sort of approach economic development? There are things that need to be considered these days that maybe didn't get put in the equation years ago. Things like community benefits agreements and what sort of environmental impacts are happening in the neighborhoods when these developments indeed come to town. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to find out what is going on in that world right now. And again, my guest is Mark Burton. He is right now the partner at Honigman and the co-leader of the firm's Economic Development Incentives Group. He is joining us from Mackinac Island. Mark, welcome to the Craig Folly Show. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thanks so much, Craig. It's good to see you again, and thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. First off, congratulations on the new appointment over at Honigman, being made partner and, of course, going to be in charge now of basically incentives, trying to figure out the best way to do these sorts of things to attract business to the region. You took over at MEDC, and we'll get back to this, you know, at a time when things were not looking good. COVID was just hitting. You take over this incredibly challenging role that was already a difficult role. Talk a little bit about that experience and what you learned about where Michigan needs to get to climb out of this, because that is a big theme at the conference this year.
Sure. So a little context, you know, from a background perspective, you know, the MEDC is a great organization, obviously been around for a long time, enacted a new strategic plan that was in part based on what the governor campaigned on in 2018. Which was really looking to diversify the economy and making it inclusive for all. My first full week is when the crisis hit Michigan. Second full week, obviously, everybody went home for remote work. And, you know, we knew instantly that our entire professional lives were going to change, and as society as whole and business, you know, and their day-to-day experiences as well. So we really tried to be as creative and as responsive and as fast as we could when it came to what ended up being 23 COVID relief programs and $240 million that we tried to pump into small and largely, you know, medium-sized businesses to keep them afloat, to survive. And, you know, some of the important lessons obviously was, you know, as we kind of come out of what was, you know, a shorter term economic crisis and into sort of these times when federal resources are coming into all states, especially, you know, from the CARES Act under President Trump to the American Recovery under Biden and continued resources on the horizon. It's really an opportunity for transformational change. You know, so much of government is incremental, and this is a great opportunity to transform things.
At the same time, your job completely shifted gears. You weren't expecting to be in charge of so many of these different programs and making sure that the money got to where it needed to go. I talk about the challenge, because this all happened over a short period of time when all of a sudden there's resources that you didn't know were going to be available, but you still got to spend them wisely. How talk a bit about that process and how it came about.
Yeah. So, you know, when we were able to access federal funds, there were also federal programs, right, that were launched through federal agencies. So we wanted to make sure that we could spread our resources as efficiently as possible without duplicating efforts that the federal government was doing on their own. So that was really kind of where we started from was, okay, let's look at the situation analysis that the federal government has these particular programs, and assuming businesses, obviously, we're going to pursue those. So then what were the gaps and how could we fill them? But I just, you know, I want to say there's 275 people who work at the MEDC, and they were all mission critical in the crisis, and they came together literally overnight and worked tirelessly to be able to figure these programs out, deploy them quickly, and still retain that level of transparency, and accountability that at the end of the day, you know, Michigan does fairly well.
Well, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about what a recovery looks like, because one of the things that you had to adjust to on the fly, as did my company adjusting on the fly, you know, working remotely, and whether or not this is going to be a continuing part of our lives going forward. Mayor Duggan hinted at it at his talk on the island yesterday that, you know, maybe we start shifting things away from trying to attract new firms downtown, maybe turn some of that stuff into residential, residential communities and things like that. How does that shift your way of thinking when it comes to economic incentives and trying to steer development in a city like Detroit?
Yeah, you know, it's and this, Craig, is a perfect example of how the federal resources can really help sort of transform downtowns of whether it's, you know, large cities like Detroit or smaller cities like, you know, Marquette, even where, you know, I grew up. So, you know, with Detroit in particular, you know, this remote nature of work is here to stay. I think, you know, a company by company decision is going to analyze what is best for their circumstances and their workforce. But yeah, so some level of it is here to stay. So the federal resources present that opportunity to really be able to make significant change quickly when in normal sort of times without those kind of resources, you just kind of chip away at the problem for maybe even a decade before you really start to see that transformation take place.
Does it change the way you think about steps you need to take to make this an attractive place to be, to live and work? Because it seems the mindset for a long time was let's attract as many large firms as we can, new factories and stuff like that. But that may not be as easy to do coming out of COVID as it was before. It might make talent attraction a little bit easier. You never know. But how does it sort of change the way that you look at what you need to do to accomplish and be successful in a role like you're taking over at Honigman?
Yeah. So, you know, the challenges, they require all of us to think differently, right? I think that's where you have to start is there such significant change that occurred not just to business or government, but I mean, our personal lives, right, have had significant impacts because of the crisis and largely will, you know, never quite be the same. A lot of things are good. Some are not so good, but that changes there. So you got to start from the standpoint of we need to think about these challenges differently. And in our case, you know, what we're looking to do here at the firm is to really help be that strategic thought partner when it comes to companies trying to analyze and figure this out themselves, at the same time, be able to bring in expertise in terms of what incentive tools are available to help shape new incentive tools that will be necessary in new times. And obviously, when it comes to these federal resources, to be able to provide, you know, a level of expertise when it comes to making sure that those get spent wisely and in a way that's going to show progress.
It seems to me that one of the big changes we've seen over the last decade or so when it comes to economic development and incentives especially is that there's a lot more light on the process than there used to be in terms of what communities, what states are willing to offer to attract people. You know, when you talk earlier about equity and development, how important is it that that stuff is up front and that people know exactly what it is they're giving up to get this new business attraction to this state?
Yeah, I think, you know, Michigan over time, you know, from an economic development standpoint has become much more accountable and much more transparent. And that's a great thing. You know, so when it comes to looking at continuing to build an economy for everyone, where everyone can participate, I think it's critically important to be upfront and honest and to have communities a part of that conversation, and not just community leadership, you know, governmental leadership in communities, but really from a citizen perspective as well. I think the understanding of what communities, no matter what size, are trying to do, and having people become a part of that is a recipe for success, and is necessary to be able to make sort of some of those transformational changes.
Yeah, I wonder from your perspective, just your opinion on this. I mean, how well is the corporate sector sort of reacting to some of these changes? Because you do have demands from communities for things like community benefits agreements. They do want to see accountability when a certain percentage of jobs are supposed to go to residents of the city in which somebody is moving to. Do they understand that this is not something that is to be taken lightly, that there's going to have to be some accountability there for what you agreed to?
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's hard to speak for business as a whole, right, or corporations as a whole, but I think that they embrace the opportunity to sometimes more publicly tell the story of how much they do support the communities that they're in. I frankly don't think that that story gets told enough in a lot of circumstances. This provides them an opportunity to do that. And I think from a citizen perspective, you know, people deserve to understand the lengths that corporations and major employers go to really make where they have a factory or they have a business or they have a headquarters feel like home.
Well, I mean, let's just use Chrysler for an example, the expansion on the east side of Detroit. I mean, you know, had this been done 25, 30 years ago, half of that project would have looked a lot different.
Absolutely.
They have done a ton of more work. And again, I think that's just sort of a change in mindset amongst both companies and government about, you know, what these people are going to be responsible for if they're going to get something in exchange for locating in your community. So I definitely want to acknowledge the point that you're making there. I do want to talk about what types of incentives are working, because we've still going through, it's a very competitive process out there to attract anybody here. What types of incentives do you find are working best for both parties? Is it simply just getting a tax break, or are there some other things that seem to be more effective at making this a desirable place to be?
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I think that Michigan can do better about, and I'm not the only person saying this, but we need more economic development tools in the toolbox. You know, that is critically important in times like these when businesses are looking to respond to COVID and post-COVID circumstances, and being able to provide tools that fit what corporations and businesses are actually looking for. So we do need more tools. And I think with the federal resources, we need to direct resources into those tools, current and new, because, you know, they do work and they do matter, because the world keeps getting smaller with technology, right? And the decisions that companies have to make, whether it's staying in Michigan but expanding in what facility they may have, or when it comes to other states, you know, a lot of other states, they tend to just use cash heavy incentives, which really makes you know, them more attractive sometimes than us on that front. We have other benefits. We have wonderful benefits that the state of Michigan offers. Our talent base is remarkable, for instance. But, you know, those things do matter at the end of the day. So being more competitive on that front is gonna help everybody.
Well, it seems as if part of your new job is going to be coming up with some of these new tools and finding ways to implement them that are good for your clients. What is something that we should be doing better here? What's a tool? You said some new tools and some tools that we don't currently have. What's something you think that Michigan could change to make the state a bit more competitive. Because as you mentioned, other states will throw the kitchen sink at some of these businesses. I look at some of the competition for even like a Google, a server farm, or the Foxconn project right. in Wisconsin. Those types of things get a lot of negative attention for the politicians that make these deals, sure. Because they don't necessarily always, the picture doesn't match what's the reality on the ground.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of being more attractive on, you know, whether take a large project like Foxconn, and that, you know, predated my time at MEDC
of course,
by years.
Of course.
Right. But that type of very large project, we just don't have large scale economic development tools right now. You know, for a period of time, Good Jobs for Michigan was one, and that supported the Stellantis FCA project in Detroit by a significant amount. It supported Pfizer as Pfizer increases their manufacturing in Kalamazoo County. But that tool we don't have anymore. It's been, inactive for a few years. But that's a tool for large projects that was transparent and accountable. And we need something else for those large projects. And that's just one example. I mean, we do have new circumstances. We do have businesses that are moving faster, right? So they may call the state and say, we want to be in a building in 90 days. So the amount of work that goes into figuring out how can we leverage a tool that's going to help make a decision in a third of that time so that a company can, move forward on the project and be able to be in a building in 90 days. You know, it's a remarkable change of pace that every state, Michigan included, needs to be more responsive at, and the more that we can do to have tools that act that efficiently and meet those needs where they are, the more effective we'll be.
Well, you know, it seems that every governor we've had in Michigan, and I go back to covering basically the late days of the Blanchard administration, have all been talking about the need to work more cooperatively as a region. So we're not poaching businesses from each other's states, but also, you know, we're not, you know, encouraging the sort of quote unquote race to the bottom that we have seen many states engage in order to attract business. Are those days over where we're going to see that level of cutthroat competition, or is that something that's here to stay and we just got to come up with something better? Our tax rates in Michigan may never match someplace like Texas.
Right. I think that's true. I think that every state has different circumstances, and tax rates, for instance, are just one of those factors that a company is going to look at. But in terms of the cooperation that's needed, again, I think the world just keeps feeling smaller. You look at Detroit, and Kevin Johnson's doing a great job at DEGC, but the Detroit Regional Partnership is a great thing that now is an extra layer, has a little broader, obviously, footprint, but the ability to coordinate and think of more than just a geographical city, territory, or county, or whatever the, you know, particular organization covers, is a very important tool, because when you sell the state, you just don't sell, you know, like I said, the city of Marquette, right? I mean, you sell much, much bigger than just the particular jurisdiction where a company's looking at.
Well, if that's the case, what is the big selling point right now for the state of Michigan and for the city of Detroit? This is obviously something you've been thinking about for a long time, or Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo or Saginaw or anywhere else. What is the big selling point that you've actually gotten some traction with?
So I think two things, you know, kind of are the top arguments for Michigan, Craig. The first is that our talent base, especially in manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, is second to none. When it comes to the cost of doing business, the cost of doing business in Michigan is relatively low. And pair with that an incredibly high quality of life that we have here in all parts of Michigan. Those two arguments are attractive to a lot of businesses, and we've got growing high tech sectors. that over the last few years, we've really had some big wins on, and that's sort of a piece of that diversification that allows us to compete for more.
But the overlap too of the tech sector and the automotive sector that we've witnessed over the last couple of decades, and what obviously is going to be there in the future. You know, you've got Ford making that tremendous investment, of course, over at the train mm-hmm. station. You've got every company that is actually working huge on this kind of stuff, and a bunch of companies that are finding their way here just because they know that there is automotive talent. And I think Silicon Valley is realizing that manufacturing expertise kind of matters.
Right.
Is this one of those things that you get a couple of big wins here and success begets success, where we'll have a number of people realizing that this is a place they have to be if they want to compete in that marketplace?
Yeah, you know, and I think when it comes to Silicon Valley, for instance, you know, the impact of remote work on those professions and those in that industry is greater than it ever will be, right, in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing. So there's another advantage, I think, that we have when it comes to your point, which is, you know, the know-how of being able to build things well is a real strength. And yeah, the electrification, you know, commitments that have come, you know, GM, Ford, you know, Stellantis, everybody, largely at this point is a really sort of dramatic evolution. And we are, you know, and we have those talent resources, we have that manufacturing know-how. And that's not just at the, you know, kind of big three level. I mean, it's suppliers.
Sure.
And it's a remarkable advantage.
Well, I think that was one of the big concerns, though, when we started seeing this big push towards electrification. And you know, you see the Teslas of the world come online, and everybody just assumes that, hey, this is going to follow everything out to California. Silicon Valley is going to be in control of this. Have we positioned ourselves well, do you think, to be the player and one of the most significant global players still in this marketplace? Because we were concerned we were going to lose this for a while.
Yeah, no question. I think Michigan has a great argument to make to all of these companies making these kind of decisions. You know, are we going to win all of them? No. And a large part of that is what we spoke about earlier, which is our economic toolbox needs a little refreshing, because the needs of companies today in electrification are slightly different than obviously what the state had been used to for, you know, the last 20 years or so. Right. So looking at this a little bit differently is important right now. But, you know, Michigan's going to remain very competitive for these projects because of our talent base, our engineering expertise, and the ability that we can move manufacturers into sort of the next industrial revolution 4.0.
Well, just a couple quick questions. I mean, from your perspective, what do you think is the willingness in Lansing in particular to refresh that toolbox right now? You know, cooperation in Lansing is not always the easiest thing.
Right.
Do you think you're going to have an opportunity? Obviously you're not with MEDC anymore, but right. You will be obviously probably working on these sorts of things. Will there be an opportunity to actually get the tools that you think you need?
You know, so I think the conversation is going to be there, Craig. I think that obviously the governor, who has done a great job of focusing on the economy coming out of the pandemic, you know, is going to need to get her hands dirty, right, with a legislature that seems to have both partisan folks on the left as well as the right, that maybe have questioned economic development, you know, in recent times. And I think that there's enough people sort of in that middle between those flanks, who, if they really care about Michigan and keeping Michigan competitive and growing in next generation autos and all these other industries, that they can come together, get the votes to do it and make it happen. But it's not easy. Nothing seems to be these days.
Although a budget did get passed, which, you know, I'm still sort of, my mind is a little blown over that fact. But all right, last question for you, Mark, and I appreciate it. You're sitting in your hotel room right now on Mackinac Island, and I appreciate you finding a place to talk to me today because I am not up there. What do you get out of this conference? You're in a different role now, of course, being representing now, of course, you know, the law firm as opposed to the MEDC. What are you looking to gain out of being up there this week?
So it's a it's always an impactful conference. Obviously, it's September and May like normal, but it's really great to get people together to focus on these issues that, on the one hand, have been consistent issues that we've all struggled with in the policymaking world for some time now, but there's a renewed sense of focus, and with the federal resources out there, a better opportunity for some of these transformational changes. So it's been great to have these conversations with people over, you know, these 3 days, 3.5 days, to really kind of focus in on how are we all going to be part of these solutions.
I hate to ask it this way, because I'm not trying to imply secrecy here, but how important is it to have these preliminary discussions one-on-one, as opposed to being in a moderated discussion that I'd be sitting in a chair asking the questions?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I've both can be successful paths, right, to be able to build consensus around certain things and achieve success. But where we are coming out of this crisis, I think the one-on-ones and that ability right now allows for a little more creative thought and almost sort of freer conversation than it would be if I'm on a Zoom call with 10 other people, right? I mean, it's just it's, you know, personal communication is so important. And if it's a small group or if it's one-on-one, getting back to that up here is wonderful.
All right. Well, Mark Burton, we certainly do appreciate your time. I want to remind folks, my guest has been Mark Burton. He has recently been named a partner at Honigman and also the co-leader of the firm's Economic Development Incentives Group. Previous job, of course, was at the head of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, CEO there. We appreciate your time, sir. Thanks for the insight, and keep us up to date on what you think is progress in the state, okay?
Thanks very much, Craig. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for checking out the show today. I really do appreciate it very much. A reminder, tomorrow it is The Week That Was. On the Craig Folley Show on Deadline Detroit, we go over the week's news, have a lot of fun doing it. And of course, I always have a panel with me. So that's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow. Plenty of stuff in the news this week to talk about, obviously. And we'll do that live at 11:30 tomorrow. You can watch it live on my Facebook page. You can watch it live on the Craig Folley Show's Facebook page, or you can watch it live on Deadline Detroit's YouTube page. We try to make it available that way. Don't forget, if you can't watch it live, that's okay. But if you can, great. We'd love to get your comments, and you can leave your comments on my show's page, and they'll come through to me, or on Deadline's YouTube page, and they'll come through during the live broadcast if you've got comments or questions, and we can work them into the discussion. That's always kind of fun. But if you can't join us live, I get that. Most of you listen to the podcast, which I will post later in the day tomorrow. Always an easy thing to do. And also, the video of it is going to be on DeadlineDetroit.com. So join us on Fridays. I promise, if you catch one show a week, we always have a lot of fun with that. Subscribe to it, like it, share it, all that good stuff. It all helps a whole bunch. I love doing this. It's a lot of fun. Now, I'll have some announcements about jobs and stuff like that coming up in a little bit, but at the same time, it looks like I'm going to get to keep doing this, so that's going to be a lot of fun, too. So that's not a bad thing. Progress, I suppose. Little hint there for you. Anyway, have a great day, everybody. I will see you tomorrow for The Week That Was on Deadline Detroit. Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com for one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to DeadlineDetroit.com/membership.